can count.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to a very special episode of Pop Culture Stars. We keep getting bigger and bigger guests on our show. One of these days we'll have Kate Smith.
Whoa,
God.
Who was that laughed? Was that you, Malcolm?
That's me. That was funny. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. You're the only person that caught that joke. Everybody else was saying, what's
the
talking about? Anyway, you caught it and you threw it back.
Well, that used
okay.
to be a, Dr. John, there used to be a biggie on laughing, Kate Smith.
Okay, all right. All right, let me get back to the show. We've got a great guest. We got the full house tonight of all of our co-hosts, and we're going to have a whole lot of fun. We're going to go back in history. We're going to go into the future. We may even go on a UFO. Anyway, welcome to Pop Culture Stars. I'm going to introduce our co-hosts as
I
they came on tonight. And if I do what?
I said I could
what
only
did you
hope.
Say? All right. Okay, anyway. The first lady of Pop Culture Stars, the wonderful, wonderful Granny Hulkster. How are you doing tonight from Springdale, Arkansas?
I'm doing very well, Dr. John. Thank you.
We are glad you're here, and we're glad that your time limit for the COVID scare has expired, I hope. And we feel like you're in good shape. I talked with Granny earlier today. She sounded good, just the way I like for her to sound, excited and happy. So thank you for being here with us, dear. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Yes, ma'am.
All righty. Now it gets a little fuzzy as to who came on next, so I'll just go down in order. Tim Armstrong, our eye in the sky from Indianapolis. How you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing great. We hit in the 50s today. I've been working from home since March, so the COVID weight is keeping me nice and warm. I'm sitting here with the vodka and diet and ready for a great show.
All right, good. We're glad you are. Glad to have you. I'm just going to call other people because I'll get the order wrong. Todd, how are you doing tonight? From the I and the J, Jacksonville.
Outstanding, supernatural, and ecstatic to be here. And a good piece of news for you all. I'll be bailing from the show probably in about 45 minutes. Got an obligation there in the morning. So, man, you guys should have some peace and quiet. So, rock on.
you're probably going to go fishing, knowing you. Anyway, glad to have you here for sure. Now, Dave Atwell, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm trying to brave this cold weather. So I can enjoy a cigar. I don't have to worry about my malt beverages getting warm, though, because it's damn chilly out here. So I'm going to go ahead and make the sacrifice so I can get my cigar. Priorities must be met. So, but, yeah, otherwise doing well. Looking forward to this evening's broadcast. No longer a show.
Well, good. We're glad you are.
Nice.
And now here he is from Ravenel, South Carolina. I like saying that name, Ravenel. The one and only, the amazing Velvet. How you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing great. How is everybody? You get Velvet tonight. You had David last week. You get Velvet tonight. I told you all that already. So just hang on to your britches.
We will all hang on to our britches. And now, by way of Pocatello, Idaho, down to Charleston, the one, the only, Malcolm Wildman. How are you tonight, Malcolm?
Well, I'm okay, but I hate the Social Security office right now.
Well, just remember, they're ultimately your friend. Pretend that, and they will be. And,
no,
and by
they're
the way,
incompetent, Dr. John. When you go, Dave took me to the DMV the next day,
all right,
on Tuesday. I said I put in for a Social Security card because mine's in a storage shed in Las Vegas. And these morons today told me that they couldn't send it to me. So I had to reorder another one. But that's all right. When I do the pay-per-view December 19th, I'm going to get revenge on TV.
All righty. Well, we are glad to have you here.
I'm happy to be with you guys because you guys are confident. The rest of the world, they're still dragging ass.
Okay, you're right. We are confident. Now, thanks to my buddy John LeMay, I didn't miss anybody, did I? No, I got everybody. I hope I did. Well, I'm here, too. Anyway, this Monday night, John LeMay, the author who's done work for the History Press, and he's got some best-selling works, and he writes on everything from the Wild Wild West down to horror movies that never got made. And it just, you know, he's so entertaining. He said after the show, he said, John, there's a guy I got to introduce you to. The two of you are going to get along really well because you both talk too much. That's what he said. He's probably right. And so we started talking Monday night, and we haven't stopped. I would like to introduce William H. Cox II. But what he's really known for is his persona when he was about 20 years old and he walked into Lincoln, New Mexico, and everybody stopped and they said, oh, my God, Billy the Kid's back. If you take a look at our Facebook page, you'll see a picture of him, and he is a dead ringer for Billy the Kid.
I saw that picture. So, you're right, Dr. John. I saw that picture.
He's a dead ringer, and I always like having dead ringers on. So anyway, without any further ado, I want to bid a welcome, a pop culture star's welcome to the one, the only, and I'm going to call him Billy the Kid tonight. Billy the Kid, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm doing fine, John. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. You've got some super stories. I've heard them all, and I know I'm going to hear them all again. So it's going to be great. I like broken records. I like hearing the same thing over and over. My dad said that about me and my music. What he didn't realize is that all the music is really different. He just didn't understand it. So anyway, so Billy, thanks for being here tonight. Where are you calling from? Where are you living these days?
I'm in Polk County, Florida. Lakeland area.
All righty. Lakeland area. So I asked all of our co-hosts to read up a little bit on Billy the Kid so they would have an idea who this great, great persona was. And what I would like for you to do is give us the 3-minute narrative on who was Billy the Kid, and then you've got one of the most incredible stories I've ever heard. And I would like for you to take more than any 3 minutes and tell us about your story, and then we'll have our wonderful panelists ask you questions and engage in marvelous discourse. So tell us a little bit about the guy that you look like.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, William Bonney was involved in that Lincoln County War. It was a war fought over land, and there was these politicians in the town of Lincoln, New Mexico, Murphy Dolan, who owned a store at one end of the town, and they had a bunch of land, and there's a lot of cattle rustling going on. And then a John Henry Tunstall moved in there from England, and he built a store at the other end of the town. And that's where Billy worked for him with a bunch of other young boys. And I guess he got in the way of Murphy and Dolan, and they owned the sheriff, and they had that he was slowly putting them out of business. So I guess on February 18th, 1878, they ambushed John Henry Tunstall and killed him. And I guess all the boys, which were known as the Regulators, went to Tunstall's lawyer, McSween, and McSween was able to get them all badges. And there was like 11 or 12 warrants to serve for the killing of Tunstall. But instead of arresting them and bringing them into justice, they were just smoking them, basically ambushing each other on the trail. And it was just a war. It got out of control, and the governor was involved in it. It was all about getting beef contracts, you know, to supply the Indians with meat and stuff like that. And somehow they were overcharging the government. It was just a bad deal all around. And so it was just a lot of conflict. And after the war was basically over, after a 5-day battle at McSween's house, Billy drifted up to Fort Sumner, and that's where he went to work up there. But they were rustling, you know, cattle too, and trying to make a little extra money. And Pat Garrett was a good friend of his, but he ran for sheriff, and they his first order of business was bring the kid in, and he captured him at Stinking Springs. Went to trial, was sentenced to hang in Lincoln, and he shot two deputies and went right back up to Fort Sumner. He could have left for old Mexico, but he loved New Mexico so much that's where he went right back up there, and Garrett caught him in the dark at Pete Maxwell's house and killed him in 1881.
And what day was that?
You know, a good movie to watch is Young Guns. You know, that's the movie that sparked my interest because it was all filmed in New Mexico, and that's where I got, you know, a lot of chills from the movie, because from the land, you know, and that's what sparked my interest to head out there.
Very good movie.
Gotcha. So now what? Now, Billy, what day in 1881 did that occur?
Yeah, July 14th, 1881.
All right. Well, then we're going to be celebrating on July the 14th. I can promise you, some America will be celebrating, and I think that'll be just great. Well, thanks for that great encapsulation of Billy the Kid. Now, tell us the really interesting story of the modern day Billy the Kid, and that's you.
Well,
all right, we're all ears, and Malcolm's got 3 ears. Okay.
Stop.
Before you go any further, I want you back on the show because you laugh at my bad jokes. Thank you. We'll get rid of Dave.
Well,
okay.
Anyway,
go ahead.
Well, going through my life, you know, I was born in 1966, you know, and growing up in the 70s and going through the 80s. And then in the late 80s, I saw the movie Young Guns. And that was all filmed in New Mexico. And I really felt connected to the land. I was like, wow. I mean, it was a weird feeling. And so I was working at a department store here in Lakeland. And I had a couple weeks vacation come up. So I bought me a Greyhound bus ticket, and I started heading out to New Mexico. And I came to Roswell, and I got off the bus, and I was looking. I didn't know where to go, so I went in this one museum to get some history, you know, and went in there, and I was looking up at the wall, and I guess all these historians and people that worked there at the museum kept staring at me, and I was like, why do they keep looking at me? You know, I got money. I'm a tourist, you know. I'm legit. And then one of the fellows, which was Kenneth Hobbs, approached me and goes, my God, you look just like him. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, dude. And so anyway, he took me to a window, and he pointed towards El Capitan Mountain. And he goes, we got to get you there. That's where it all started, in the one street town of Old Lincoln, New Mexico. And he goes, well, I'd like to get there. Is there a bus or something? I mean, or some kind of way of getting up there? And it's so remote up there. I mean, he tried his best to make some connections, but couldn't. So he says, I tell you, you meet my wife and kids, and we'll take you up there. So the family came and picked me up at the motel and put me up. And then we went to Lincoln. And we pulled right in front of John Tussle's store and down the street into the old two-story courthouse where the kid made his escape. And that's where I met Jack Rigney, the chief ranger for the state of New Mexico. And he about, like, just fell out of his chair. And I still didn't know what was going on. It just didn't connect. It was just weird. And he goes, my God, don't go nowhere. What's your name? I go, Billy. And he just tripped out even more. And so before I could get through the courthouse, he's taking Polaroids of me and getting my address. And he goes, look, let's stay in touch, man. And so after that, you know, I went camping with the family and quite didn't understand it. And went back to Florida, showed everybody the Polaroids, and everybody was just like, wow, Billy, you know, you do, man. It's amazing, man. Before I know it, the state was calling me, you know, Jack, and inviting me out there and said, never happened before, and, you know, let's see where it goes. So and me and my friends went to New Orleans prior to that, and I bought me a stovepipe hat on Canal Street. And to get ready for my, you know, adventure out there. And he says, you can stay here, man. It don't even matter. And so I went there, set my backpack on his porch, and just went roaming up and down Lincoln and hanging out, just meeting everybody. And before I know it, the TV crews were there, and even Smithsonian came. And it was just – and I hit that one pose. And and yeah, it blew. I mean, people were running off the road, and I was doing skits with Jack Rigney because he's an ex Vietnam vet, and you know, he was a cool dude, and he told the escape ability kid in the old Lincoln courthouse, and at the end of it, you know, he would tell the people to look at the brochure, and that's the only photo they have of Billy the Kid. And sometimes he's there by himself. He hears things. And that's when I came walking in, and I'd hit that, strike that pose. And the kids were crying. People were just freaking. It was actually quite fun. But anyway, I stayed there, and then I had some problems in Lincoln because I was making money from the tourists, and I started getting volunteer job offers, you know, to take me away from the state. And I kept turning them down, and before I know it, the local deputy in the area was harassing me and accusing me of shooting cattle and, you know, doing all kinds of breaking into the Wharton Hotel and sleeping in a room that once was occupied by Billy the Kid. And it was pretty serious because it hit the papers, and, you know, I tried to be at peace because I came there just to have fun. But it just kept on and on and on. I figured, man, it's time for me to go. So I left there, and I went to Old Fort Sumner, and that's where the kid went. But he was, you know, eventually gunned down. But I went there and worked for Jake West. It was a big family. They were a Christian family. And I went farming, bucking hay, working with cattle. Alan West, who owned the hardware store, you know, everybody had sections of land. You know, Jake West was like a father figure to me, and he grew watermelons. So we all pick watermelons and take it to the market and sell them. Anyway, so that just went on all the way through the winter, you know, and around December 31st, I got this feeling it was time to leave. And I put a little cross in the ground, and I took off into the sunset, you know, and that was the end of my adventure. Of course, there's a lot more, but I'm just trying to give you the highlights of it. But it was a pretty amazing experience. But I was there in New Mexico for 2 years, almost about 2 years.
And you did everything from all get accused of rustling cattle and sleeping in hotels and getting in trouble with the law and everything. Well, you sound just like Billy the Kid.
Well, it was just different circumstances. I mean, it was just, I was making money, you know, I was just, you know, of course I was a different Billy. I was there to have fun and hang out with people and have an experience. And of course, you know, but not everybody's happy, you know, and you know, like that to go like that. They like to, you know, cause trouble sometimes, you know, and I was at peace. But when I went to Fort Sumner, they welcomed me with open arms. Like I said, I had the best time of my life up there until it was time for me to exit New Mexico. And 25 years later, there's been some stuff written on me. And John LeMay, of course, wrote a book called Tall Tales and Half Truths. But he bought my autobiography and gave me 3 pages. It's called New Kid in Lincoln Town. And he's just done the world for me. And I'm just trying to tell my story, you know, and it seems to be growing, you know, and I wrote that autobiography, and I just tried to stay true to it. You know, that's why because growing up in the 70s, I always felt something was going to happen, and I couldn't pinpoint it, but I felt something was going to happen, but, you know, just couldn't, you know, figure it out. But I went ahead and just lived my life until it did happen. So.
And then you came on Pop Culture Stars, and the world exploded for you, right?
Yeah. The wind blew me in your direction. Thanks to John LeMay and, you know, introducing me. And, you know, I love South Carolina. I love Charleston. Been to Fort Sumter. You know, I'm a big time into the Civil War, and I take a lot of adventures to all the battle sites. And me and my girl, Tony, went to Gettysburg 2019. We did a whole Virginia, all the battles from Petersburg to Waynesboro, Charlottesville, Richmond, Williamsburg. I mean, it was about 2.5 weeks, but and then we went to Winchester and then Antietam, and then straight up to Gettysburg and stayed there for 4 days, camped out at Artillery Ridge. Had a blast. It was really, really cool.
As an aside, have you ever had a chance to go to the Perryville Battlefield in Kentucky?
No, I haven't. I've been to Nancy, Kentucky. There was a battle there, and
yes,
me and Tony did. We were there in 20. So yeah, I've been all there. I hiked that old trail. There's an old road or trail that goes through the woods right there. So and of course, you know, I got my mama's family come from South Carolina, right there at Marion, the Stalvies. So I think that's pretty cool.
I mean,
you know,
as I was telling you earlier today, I guess it would have been your uncle who used to sell me my liquor in Conway at Salty's ABC store. So
really, I got cousins down here, Becky and Jim Stalvey. He was in the banking business. They lived down here back in the late 70s, early 80s for a while. Then they moved to Spring Hill, Florida. But from what I understand, his father, or they come out of Conway. You know, but Marion's where my grandfather, William Fletcher Stalvey.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, you got a neat story, and
well, I appreciate
now,
it. Thank you.
Were you ever back after you made your escape into the sunset after that 2 years? When was it? How many other times have you been back to New Mexico, and what have you done while you were there?
Oh yeah, when I left, I went back to Florida and I hung up my stovepipe hat. Didn't need to get on with my life and be versatile and just, you know, do other things and just get back with my friends and still travel and take adventures. And after a while, I gave it some time and then I think I got invited to come live in Texas in Dallas, and I had some friends from Florida that were riding after, so I rode with them, and that was an experience, you know. But when I got to Texas, you know, I was close to New Mexico, and I was cleaning carpet for Marcus out of Dallas. His father and son, Kim Dry. And anyway, during the summers, he told me, hey, you ever want to travel, you know, and see everybody in New Mexico, go at it, have at it, brother, and just come back whenever. So I take off, and I think it was 1995 when I went over and I spent the winter out there with my friend Thomas Klein and Melinda out of Roswell, and stayed there for the winter and got a little job and just visiting and roaming, just reminiscing, basically going back into Lincoln. It was still pretty wild there, you know, but I was done doing what I did, and so I wore a different hat, you know, so I just go there visiting, and I go back to Texas, and then I go back, and I was always still getting write-ups, and then I think last time I got a good write-up in 2014 from Kelly Brooks from the Ruidoso News, and it was called Billy the Kid Lookalike Publishes Memoirs, and of course that story did very well, and I believe that's how I met, I think John's seen that story. Well, Roswell did a story on me, and he's seen that story, and that's when he contacted me in 2014 or 2015 and said he'd like to, you know, give me a few pages in his book. So I thought that was pretty cool.
And that's how I met you, because we just did a spectacular this Monday night on Tall Tales, Billy the Kid, and it was a lot of fun. And
Tall, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and so I said, well, after the show, I said, well, I need to get in touch with this guy, and that's when he said, well, you two talk so much, you'll have a good time. You'll never shut up. I said, that's great. You know, he knows me well enough. He can say nasty things about me. So now the floor is open to our great panelists. Questions about the absolute dead ringer for the one and only Billy the Kid, who has got to be now one of my favorite historical, he and Caligula. I mean, what more can you say?
Thank you.
Nobody got the joke.
Okay.
Malcolm, at least you get my jokes. You're going to be the only panelist on the show next week. So anyway, let's start
great.
Talking to John. No, not to John, to Billy. Let's start talking to Billy, because he's got some great stories. He's had a lot of fun. He's met a lot of crazy but wonderful. Would you say crazy but wonderful people would accurately describe the people there in that area of New Mexico?
Oh no, well, there's some wild people out there, but a lot of good nature, good, you know, folks that are in the history, respect the history, and you know, they live the same way. I mean, they work, they have ranches, and just good people, good-hearted people.
Yeah. Is cattle still a big industry out there?
Oh yeah, because everything's left untouched. You know, the whole county's been basically preserved, and they, you know, there's ghost town. There's this, the ghost town of White Oaks. There's a bar there called the No Scum Allowed Saloon, and that's where that building's been there since the 18. Been there since 1800s. So if you ever go to New Mexico, you got to go right straight to White Oaks. They featured that name in Young Guns 2. If y'all ever saw Young Guns 2, where the lady was riding the horse out. Yeah, she said White Oaks, dude, maybe you can kiss my, you know what. So anyway, that's an actual ghost town. Now, Lincoln, New Mexico is a one-street town, and only 70 people live there, but it's still a living community. Descendants still live there. But the state owns half of the town, a lot of the buildings there. So they come from all the world to walk up and down that street. So if you want to go back in time, they got some bed and breakfasts there. You know, I don't know what's all open with all this COVID stuff going on. I was just there in 2020. Yeah, I was able to sneak out there with all the shutdowns and stuff that was going on. I was able to, a buddy of mine from Tampa wanted to know if I wanted to ride out with him. And I'm like, let's go. Because everything's, you know, so crazy. I had to get to the land. And I went and visited Jack Rigney, who's, you know, he's not young. He's 78 years old. So he built a house on top of a foothill just outside Lincoln. And so spent time with him about a week and a half. And then John LeMay came and got me. And we went riding to Devil's Canyon, which is the old Fort Stanton Trail. Fort Stanton is like 1 mile from Lincoln. So everything's just left untouched. It's the old fort. And when you go there, you could be the only one there just walking around. It's just, it's just amazing. I can't believe that, you know, it's just everything's left untouched. And I've been to a lot of places, and there's a lot of history, but out there you just ride the open land, the land where they rustled the cattle, where they hid. It's unbelievable, you know, that something like that exists. But, you know,
well, I can tell everybody one thing. I got a buddy of mine, and he and I are going to work on the brand new website, LincolnNewMexico.com. Right, Billy?
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's really nice of you, man, to do that.
Because I think there's so much history out there. And I think a lot of times I've heard several people say, well, you know, like I think it was Granny Hulkster. I was talking to her. She said, well, you know, we studied some Billy the Kid in school. Didn't you tell me that earlier today, Granny?
Yeah, I did. I mean, see, I graduated from high school in 1980, but I know when we were like in elementary school, you know, junior high, you know, I remember studying, you know, a little bit about Billy the Kid history and, you know, things like that. Because, I mean, I love a good Western. I mean, I love Western movies. And when you talked about Young Guns and Young Guns 2, those are two of my favorite movies. I mean, I tell you, I love those movies. I mean, I've seen them so many times, but I could sit and still watch them
over again.
Yeah,
Pat Garrett, Billy the Kid is another good one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. And for you to look so much like him, I mean, it's amazing how much you look like Billy the Kid. I mean, it's just, you know, what was it like, I mean, for you to go out there and for people just to stop and just, like, stare and look at you like, oh, my God. I mean, were they just so in awe, like they were like looking like, you know, sometimes like when you see a ghost, you know, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, what was the kind of expressions or the kind of, you know, attitude people gave you when you showed up there the first time?
Oh yeah. It was just like you said, I had people that were older that were driving and drove off the road and almost hit, you know, poles and stuff. I mean, and the people come up to me and say, man, my grandfather got chest pains when he saw you, man. And just the people were just like, it's a strange, weird feeling, man. It's just like, you know, I mean, it was just, I was meeting so many people because of it, you know. It's just like, man, wow, dude, this is, they just looking me up and down, and just, I mean, it was weird. It's hard to explain, but it's just at that time, and then it was just like the feeling. It was all about that feeling. It was weird, you know, the feeling I got from the land, and it's just everybody came out wanting to play, to have fun, you know. I was kind of like everybody's Billy. And I guess everybody's been thinking about it for so many years. It finally happened. And then all of a sudden
you show up, out of the clear blue and just kind of like put everybody in shock. Like, oh my God.
It's not so much what you know, it's kind of so much what you don't know. And
that's right.
And that's why I see so much attention, because you know, I didn't know it. And that's why he didn't know it. He came out, then people start laughing, and then, you know, everybody was just, you know, introduced me to everybody. And then, you know, and it just, it made the whole experience, you know. And then when the deputy pulled his stunt, you know, I mean, I was actually with a, you know, out there for good. You know, I had a, you know, I'm William Cox. I was always William Cox, never William Bonney. And I know people are going to say, oh, man, he's getting lost in the care. But it was never that way. But they tried to run me out of town because I was the one guy named Bob from the Historical Trust. He says, hey, Billy, you know, and even though I was with the state, he approached me on the street and said, hey, I'd like to give you an offer your volunteer job, Billy, if you're interested. And I said, oh, well, I'm fine with Jack in the state. And he'd say, well, don't take too long to think about it. And he turned around and walked away. And I'm like, that's kind of odd. So anyway, so I went back and I just resumed work with the state because that's how the Mother Nature planned everything, you know. And mm-hmm. he kept bugging me. And then one day I went to rock. I was at the Ellis store with Blake, Patrick. They're all musicians. They're all about my age. They're young. It was a bed and breakfast. And a Bronco came riding by. And one of the boys goes, hey, Blake, man, the deputy just rode by. And they were just joking around, going, oh, he's probably here for Billy. And I stepped out there, to see if he continued driving onto the road. But he's sitting there, and he's doing his fingers like, come here. And I was like, oh, hell, what's this all about? So that's when I get in the Bronco, and he goes, hey, Billy, how you doing? I'm like, I'm doing just fine, brother. He goes, Bob said he offered you a job. You want to tell me about it? And I'm like, so I told him, and I said, yeah, but I'm fine with Jack. And he goes, oh. Well, anyway, I just want to let you know that, you know, there's some cattle missing and being shot in Salazar Canyon. And quite frankly, Billy, some of the ranchers think you're doing it. And I'm like, went right in my gut. I mean, I was like, holy cow. And you want to tell me more about this job? And I was like, now look, you can either play by the rules, Billy, or you can get back on a bus and go back east. Okay? Or you can always come back next year. You know. But anyway, so by that time I met a lot of people. And so I left Lincoln, but instead of going back home, I went to Roswell, and that's when I just started going where I met all these good old folks. And they put me up, and I just kind of ran circles around him. So he never knew, you know, my moves. So I just stayed there, and I'd go into Lincoln for two nights. I'd disappear. I just, because there was things that were happening, and, you know, say, hey, man, this magazine wants to do a story on you. I mean, so it's kind of like they were trying to, you know, destroy my dream, you know, and I couldn't allow that. And going through what I went through growing up, you know, I lost my mother when I was 13. I went through some traumatic experience, but this time was time for me to shine, and I couldn't allow them to ruin it. So, I mean, I ran circles around him, and he couldn't, I didn't give him a chance to do anything. So, and then, but it kept coming, it cooled off for a while, and then the Wortley Hotel happened. And then he goes, and so he accused me of that. And I'm like, and then even they went to, he started harassing Blake and them. And I was working, I was helping building roofs, you know, for some of the historical buildings. I was having fun. I was a free spirit kid trying to rain on my parade. After it kept happening, I told them that, hey, what extent are they going to go to make me leave? You know, they're going to fire shots at me or something next. And I started getting nervous, and there was a storm. They had to go to the Rio Dosa to rehearse. They were, you know, jam out. So I was up in that mill house behind the Ellis store. If y'all ever go out there, you'll see it in the back. It's a big circle drive that goes back in there, but it's old nursing quarters, you know, and a lot of TB students. I mean, people die from TB. In the 1800s. But anyway, they made it with a bunch of rooms, and there's a loft upstairs, and it had a bed, some instruments. I slept up there, and it's spooky as all get out, man. And it was about to fall apart. But anyway, I slept up there, and this storm was coming in. I was by myself. The windows were banging, and I was like, and I kept looking around. I was like, man, it felt like someone was coming up the stairs. I was just freaking out, man. I was like, man, it's time to go. And I went downstairs into another room, and the next morning, I went to go see a friend to see if he was he had some hay or something. He was heading to Fort Sumner to get something. And I said, man, can I catch a ride with you, brother? And he goes, sure, Billy, let's ride. And I said, so I jumped in the truck, and I headed to Fort Sumner. And I didn't look back. I mean, it really freaked me out. Just to, you know, it's really, you know, even when I went and that, I mean, I was there for a while, almost a year, and I mean, there was dances all up and down the street. I was attending dances, and you know, where it was just a big fiesta when I was there, and people having cakes and food. The kids, I played with the kids on the Rio Bonito. I mean, it was just you know, certain the political, you know, politicians in that area that were giving me a hard time, but Jack and them had my back, you know, and they were with the state, and they told me nothing to worry about it, and it'll blow over, but, you know, I didn't stick around to find out. So I went to Fort Sumner, and it hit the papers. You know, it's in my book. You know, I did document the paper, but the paper says, you know, told about the trouble, but at the end of the story it says, but Billy says, you know, Lincoln is too hot right now, so he's going to go to Fort Sumner to cool down. And that was my little silent slap. Because everybody thought Lincoln was crazy. Here they had the closest thing to the kid together, but instead they tried to run me out. But that's the way life is, and that's the way people are. But it backfired on them, and I continue my experience in Fort Sumner. Worked for Jake West, and even Lincoln took Fort Sumner to court back in the 60s, or I think it was, you know, over the remains of Billy the Kid. So they were I went to Fort Sumner, I was protected, and I went to work for Jake West, and the greatest person. He's passed away since then, you know, but I've always made a point. I took my ex-wife and kids out there through the years, and he's just a great guy, you know, he's famous for his watermelons because they raised them right there in the valley off the Pecos River. It's organic in the same land that Kit Carson tried to organize the Navajo Indians. So that's the land we farm right there. But you can still see some of the trees planted in a row. They're old, that the Navajos planted. But anyway, but he made a name for himself, and we used to take melons to the organic farmers market in Santa Fe. So, you know, they're not so much about Billy the Kid up there like Lincoln is. I mean, they are, but it's a different vibe. And, you know, he was finally gunned down there by Pat Garrett. You know, but, you know, plenty of chances to leave. And I left, you know. So I hope I ain't boring you guys with all this. You know.
No, you're
right. Oh,
really,
no,
you're
this
not,
is absolutely
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah,
I love this. This is absolutely
over.
Awesome.
Yeah, Todd, what you
well, I appreciate
say?
It. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm
well,
getting ready to head out, so I wanted to throw something in there. The something I just felt like was really glossed over, you were talking about spending time in Roswell.
Oh, yeah. I'd always go. What your question is? I'm sorry.
I was saying, speak on it. I mean, we all know what Roswell is, so.
Well, yeah, before when I was hanging out there, there was no UFO museums or nothing. You know, it was all known for John Chisholm. And his ranch is still there. Yeah, Jingle Bob's. And me and Tom used to go all back in there. But, yeah, it's still a modern-day ranch, and you'll see some of the abandoned ruins. But it was a John Chisholm town. It's a good-sized town. But, that's where it was one of my main bases, you know, because I used to go – because I go back and forth to Lincoln, but then I'd go to Roswell to get with Tom. You know, because he knew the land well. So we used to roam the land together. And his wife would cook for us, you know, and, you know, make burritos. And so we'd take off on the Pecos River. So we'd always go up to Fort Sumner and hunt hog. And he was a good hunter. And so that's what we always tried to do. And he always made rabbit stew. And, you know, then we go. So I was always on the move. And, not just Lincoln. I mean, yeah, I was living in Lincoln and then all that stuff happened. But. And then, you know, we cut over to Carrizosa or White Oaks. So it was the whole county. We were roaming the whole county. But Roswell, yeah, Roswell, it's a modern town. You know, it's pretty good size. But, but Jingle Bob's still there. You can probably call them and get a tour there. They got, you know, big old ranch house there. And you'll see some of the old rock houses was, you know, half torn down from the John Chisholm day. And there's a road. If you go by the grave in Fort Sumner, the paved road turns to dirt, but it curves around and starts heading south. But it goes along the Pecos River, but that's the old trail. But there's some abandoned buildings about 20 miles south of Roswell, and that was Chisholm's cow camp. And they're just sitting there. And nobody even knows about it unless you read the books and know the history. You know, but we slept in a lot of them rock houses, you know, when we were hunting. And Tom had his big old Dodge Ram truck, you know, Bronco. So it was, Yeah, we was always moving. I mean, I was all up and down Lincoln, and that was a main attraction because it's all left untouched. And but I was, up in Ruidoso, which is a little farther up, but that's a little ski area town. But you got Mescalero Apache Reservation, it's just fascinating,
I want to ask you something real quick. What years did you call Roswell home, and was it really known as the Chisholm area? Because that would kind of precede its tourism draw as a UFO capital. So about when was that?
Oh, when I called it home? Well, I mean, I lived there. I went back. Well, I stayed there on and off. I didn't have one place where I lived in New Mexico. I was roaming everywhere. But that was when I left New Mexico in 91, it was, I think, 92 or 93, I was watching Inside Edition, and that's when I saw Glenn Dennis talking about the UFO incident. And then that's when everything started blowing up in Roswell. He had the first UFO research center in Roswell. So when I lived out there, I went to visit in 95. So I stayed out there most of 95. And I lived out there, and then, of course, I went and visit the UFO museums, and I would visit with Glenn Dennis. He was the mortician there, and I guess his story is, they want to know if he can embalm the bodies. I don't know the exact story. I believe that's what his story was, but he saw the bodies through the door window, laying out on a table. So.
Well, that's really interesting, and I'll go ahead and share something about my experience with Roswell, is that I got in trouble with the feds in 89 about some stories that somebody that knew too much told me. And it seemed as though to me that Roswell, it was kind of bubbling in and around, and people, they were talking a little bit about it, but it wasn't such a huge, huge tourist attraction like it became, I guess, in the mid-90s and beyond. And so, That's interesting. Now, is Glenn Dennis, is he still alive?
Last time I heard him and his wife were in a nursing home. I would imagine they're probably passed on by now, because they'd be in their 90s, But Glenn Dennis used to own that Wortley Hotel while I was in Lincoln, and that's how I got to know him. And I'd go in there and wash dishes. And he'd give me a hamburger or whatever, and I just, just hanging out with him and, cruising around with him. So I got a chance to, be buddies with him and his wife, when I was living in Lincoln. And then when I left, I saw him on Inside Edition. I don't know.
Kids?
He may. I'm sure he may have kids. I don't know. I didn't know him. I don't think I ever met him. Unless I did, just didn't know it. But that's a good question. John LeMay would know for sure.
All right, I'll make a note of that one. That's a question we need to ask John LeMay. Is that hotel still operational?
Oh, the Wortley Hotel, yeah. It's been bought by several owners, and even Jack Rigney, Buddy Vic and his family owned it for a long time, and they made their money off of it, and then they sold it just a couple years ago to somebody. I don't know who they are, but you could stay there, but they made it like a bed and breakfast. So you get breakfast, but before you used to be able to eat, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they had a little bar in there. And there's some fun times there, but, it looked closed down when I went out there. But I'm sure it still could be open, but you got to make reservations probably.
Okay. Gotcha.
But there's some other, but there's okay. There's the Ellis bed and breakfast too.
Okay. That's cool. And Todd, I hope I helped clarify some things when Roswell really started getting known for UFOs, that was like the late, early 90s. Would that be correct to say, Billy?
Yeah, 91, when I left, it was just a Western town with some shops. They were trying to get it going, with some coffee houses and stuff like that, stuff for the kids to do. And I think 92, 93, I'm in Florida, and I was thumbing through, I saw Inside Edition come on. And also, I see Glenn Dennis being interviewed about a UFO, and I was like, "Whoa, what's this?" I said, "I'll be darned, something happened in the '40s." So the story resurfaced, and also it blew up. And there's a big research center there, and that's his. He's responsible for that, So it's just been going strong ever since. And they got the big festival there that brings people from all over the world. You know, I don't know, with all this COVID stuff going on, I don't know if it happened this past summer. But a lot of things got canceled, but, you know.
Yeah, well. But, well, we had the Lizard Man Festival online this year. And, I mean, you know, we had 700 people the first time 2 years ago. We had 200 last time, and we had 300 this past year watched talks from the Lizard Man Festival in South Carolina. And, I mean, people love that stuff. I was hoping that we could take the Lizard Man and make the city of Bishopville a real tourist attraction, and all they wanted to do was run me out. I feel like Billy the Kid there. I'll have to tell you the story sometime. Or actually, everybody can listen to it. I was interviewed on RadioDisclosure.com, and I got the whole nasty story of how the city of Bishopville tried to close the Lizard Man Festival down. So I just got mad that night, and I told Matt Aaron, I just said, here, I'm going to tell you the truth, and you know, just if you find out that I died, you'll know where to go start investigating. Go to investigating Bishopville, because they probably tried to kill me after I told all the nasty things that they did to try to keep Lizard Man from happening. But that's another story for another time and everything. Todd, do you have anything else? Because I know you got to go. Do you have anything else you'd like to add or propose or discuss with Billy?
No, Billy, big appreciation for you taking time to be on the show with us. I'm really grateful. There's the thing that was cool, because I went ahead and did look up some little more, you know, some more odds and ends things on Billy the Kid. And they're just, depending upon where you go and look, there's some really cool stories about him having his horse stolen by Apaches and having to walk to the point that he had to be nursed back to life. Yeah, you know, so there were some other stories out there that they're not young guns, if you will. You talked about your parental loss when you were young. Sorry for your loss, brother. And with Billy the Kid being an orphan, you know, and I was just like, that was kind of an interesting parallel when you brought that up. So there's a man. I'm gonna
steal my thunder, Todd.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah,
no,
meeting all you guys.
Tim, you got some more thunder on that one. Don't worry about that one. You can ask that question next. But there's a lot of
causing the thinking. Everybody, stay safe. Take care of one another. Have a good evening, all. I'm going to.
You too. Nice to meet you.
Bye, Todd.
Todd, we'll see you next week. You take care, buddy.
Later, buddy.
Guys, I think he probably is going to go fishing, but that's nothing I'm supposed to tell. Just pretend I didn't say it, okay? But anyway, all right, Tim, ask that question, because it goes along with, there are a number of parallels. And Billy, do you mind Tim starts talking about this, do you mind sharing some parallels with you and Billy?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay, so Tim, the floor is yours.
Well, I was really just going to basically hit on the same thing Todd said. I think that's pretty, and you know, not to bring it up, and again, you know, like Todd said, sorry for your loss. I know it's been a while, but that was one thing I had noticed too is, you know, Billy the Kid, he was orphaned, and I'm not sure what his relationship was, because I believe he had a stepfather, but obviously there wasn't enough there for him to stay with him. I believe he, you know, left and went about his ways. You know, just when you had mentioned that, I thought, wow, that's kind of interesting. So there is a different, you know, and if there are more parallels, that'd be awesome. We'd love to hear it. I think all of us would. But I was kind of wanting to just inquire a little bit more about, you know, you going back to the town of Lincoln, because I think you said there were somewhere like, what, 70 people around that town right now?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, it was about 70 people at that one. Not many people at all. I mean, it could be less. But at that time, I always heard it was 70 people that lived there.
Okay. Well,
in the town of Lincoln.
I thought that was interesting, you know, and it almost seemed to me like, and forgive me if I didn't catch the whole blurb, but it was almost like it felt like it had this vibe to where you might have been forced out because you didn't take a certain job offer or deal. It was almost like I'm kind of wondering if some of that could have been shady, as far as, you know, they were just kind of trying to set you up, or if they really suspected you were doing some, you know, mischievous stuff.
But, yeah.
And again, you were talking about, you know, tourists giving you money. And in my brain, I'm kind of envisioning like the Vegas performers, you know, that are out there on Fremont.
Yeah.
And they're doing, you know, and getting tourist money. So I didn't know, though, but you talked about how small of a town it is, and I didn't know if that played into it, if the town was really kind of like into you being there, or if there were people that were kind of like, you know, this is kind of mocking the town, or
I just
go into a little more detail about that.
Yeah, obviously I was making, I was working with Jack. I was backed up by the state, so the state and all the state people welcomed me with open arms, and I was making money for photos, and when I did the deal with Jack, and of course I split my money with the state, so they had a donation box. So I always donate a good amount. When like say with the presentation, they would go and put money in the donation box. So the state was making money off of me. And then when I went to in the town, someone's always telling me, "Hey, can I get a photo of you?" You know, and I was like, "Yeah, sure, open for a little donation." So, you know, I'm sure some people had a problem with that, you know, because, you know, when it comes to money, that's when people come out of the woodwork. And then then with Bob offering me that volunteer job, yeah, he was wanting to do the same thing, and they were wanting to make some money. They were going to put a donation box up in a little room and just have people take pictures of me. They were different. It was a historical trust. And so it was definitely about the money, and you know, so you know, it's like, well, let's run him out. And there was, it's just, and it could be a lot of other things too. So, but first they befriended me first. They were my friends, nice to me. And then once tourist season ended, then they kind of, that's when the stuff started happening, you know. And as far as parallels, you know, of course, the press would research this, and I would tell some of the newspapers. The zip code in Lincoln was 388338, and the zip code in Bartow, where I was born and raised, was 33830. And they thought that was kind of strange. And then, I'm Irish and English, and he was Irish. And then the William H. in both our names, except he was William H. Bonney, and I'm William H. Cox with the C coming after B, you know, and. They just found that to be fascinating. And it's just coming from the east. He came from the east, and I came from the east. But a different trail, you know, not to be the same as him. It's just a different time, a new time, you know. And I didn't go out there thinking all guns and all that stuff. I mean, I had a Winchester to pose with the photos. But since I wasn't there, I was out working and hanging out and going to dances and, you know, dancing with the senoritas and just, you know, just trying, you know, just being me, you know, having fun, giving them something special. And most of the people out there was with it. But, you know, there's always a few that aren't with it. And that's just the way it is in mankind. That's life. And I answered your question.
Yeah, that's perfect. And it's funny to build on that, when we talk about parallels and you're talking about stuff like zip codes, and even though they're kind of like exact opposites or whatnot, I don't know. And I don't want to steal anybody else's thunder because maybe everyone else has the same thought, but I can't help but to think back on the whole similarities, the spooky similarities between Kennedy and Lincoln. And you had, you know, assassinations, and Lincoln's secretary's name was Kennedy, and Kennedy's secretary's name was Lincoln. I think I got that right. Just the spooky similarities. So just throwing it out there. Wild stuff. But no, glad you're on the show. This is good stuff.
Oh, yeah. And like I say, lots of press people say, well, you know, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, Billy Kidd was allowed, you know, he had to die, you know. But, it was cool. I appreciate you having me on the show and everything, man. You know, it was nice meeting you guys and everything.
Well,
I hope to make it to South Carolina.
Hey, Dr. John, I didn't get to ask you.
We
wanted
to come to South Carolina. Me neither.
Who's from Arkansas? Malcolm, did you have a question you wanted to ask Billy?
No, I just wanted to tell him, Billy, I was stationed at Fort Bliss, Texas, which is on the border of El Paso, Texas. El Paso, next to the border of New Mexico, I should say. And we used to go to Las Cruces a lot for concerts. And when we went to New Mexico, we used to see we used to stop at some restaurants and we'd see pictures of people like Billy the Kid and other Western folklore. And I used to go to these Hollywood shows since October 2000, and I met this guy, Corey Feldman, and his wife at a couple of shows, and one show, and I told Corey, I remember this, it was Gunfight at the Moore K Corral, instead of OK
wow.
Corral, and Corey Feldman played Billy the Kid, that was his idol, and he was challenging
really?
Moore to a duel in the street, a gunfight.
Are you talking the Corey Feldman?
Yeah, the Corey Feldman, yeah.
Wow, that's cool. That's so cool.
And I
wow.
met another guy that was on the Twilight Zone that played the part of Billy the Kid. And another guy that was on Cimarron Strip with Stuart Whitman. They did a story that they mentioned Billy the Kid. So I didn't know
wow.
that much about him. But entertainment-wise, I was really introduced to his character. I did see Young Guns in Young Guns 2. And Lou Diamond Phillips mentioned Billy the Kid at a show with Lorenzo Lamas and the guy that played Bud Bundy, David Faustino. We were all three next. And I mentioned Young Guns, and somehow Billy the Kid got mentioned. So I thought I'd mention
wow.
it to you. And Billy,
cool.
if I meet you someday, I'd love a couple of pictures with you. I don't care about autographs, but I love taking pictures with people.
Oh, yeah. That's fine.
And
that's,
I'll pay
whatever.
You for
yeah,
it.
Whatever.
No problem.
Oh, yeah. I ain't worried
Malcolm,
about it. It's cool, man.
Malcolm, the plan is to get Billy the Kid up here in January. So
cool.
I'll let everybody know, and if we do, we will get it. Velvet, will you help me host him down in Charleston?
Absolutely.
All right, Malcolm,
do I get to carry six guns? A gun
no.
belt and six guns?
No.
No, you can carry five.
Sorry, Billy.
All right. Can I say something real quick?
No, it is your turn to talk.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's my turn. We got Billy the Kid Monday night, and everything that you said, I intently listening because we pretty much covered all this Monday, and I was the one who said that I believe that Pat Garrett did not kill him, and they came up with a plan and they shot somebody else. That's why there was nobody there. They didn't let anybody see the body. They buried the body, and that I think Billy went to Mexico for a while and came back, and this other guy claimed to be him. Bushy Bill claimed to be Billy the Kid, and I bet you he was standing next to him, and he didn't know it. So the parallel I see with you is you look like him, but you were drawn to go out there, and you experienced
right.
the same bullying that Billy the Kid did. Billy was trying to paint a picture of him through you in this day and time with all the troubles. When you got there, everything was good. You were hanging out with the women and dancing. He did the same thing. He was a ladies' man. You were out there.
Yeah.
He was trying to show this to you through your eyes, through his eyes, if you get what I mean. He was trying to take you through what he was doing back then and how the land is still untouched. It's still the same.
Right.
Everything's still the same, and yet you've got, like, when the sheriff came up to you and said that, you know, blamed you for this and blamed you for that, he'd been through that. He was showing
you the path
of what was going on, and I believe that's the parallel he was trying to make. He wants somebody to tell his true story, whether he died at the hands of Pat Garrett or not. He wants somebody to tell what really happened out there.
I'm going to interrupt you, Velvet. I want you to keep talking, but I want to tell you this, is that one of the finest remote viewers in the country, which is Robin McRae, who's on the Monday Night Show, she said to me several times, she said, John, different people killed Billy the Kid than anyone knows, and he wants us to know who it was. So
exactly.
This is a conversation I had with her yesterday because I waited – I just didn't have a chance to, you know, sit down and talk with her on the phone for what, you know, until yesterday.
Right.
She said, Billy the Kid wants us to know who shot him, but it's not who you think.
Right.
Whatever that means. And she said she would keep looking into it. And I'm going to tell you something. She's pretty damn powerful when it comes to figuring out things. So there you go.
I think that is going on here because you went out there with open arms. They went out there and they opened you up. They probably did the same thing to him. He charmed everybody. You went out there looking like him, and it freaked people out. Because you know what? If it freaked somebody's grandfather out, that tells me that he was not killed in the late 1800s. That he was still alive. And he had laid low for quite a while and came back, and nobody figured it out, but he was amongst the people. He probably was doing what you were doing. He probably worked that same farm. He probably worked that same land.
That sounds
too close and too good to be true, but I'm telling you, there's a meaning behind it, and we just need to take this evidence and all this stuff and put it together and figure it out. And that's what he wants us to do. And he wants you to do the same thing too. He wants us to figure this out. He's laying it out. There's a trail. We just got to pick up the crumbs.
You're right.
Let Dave ask a question and then Malcolm, we'll get yours.
Those are
great observations, Dave. I mean, they really are, and I'm glad we got this taped. I want to go back through, Billy, and I want to jot down some of these good observations and talk about them with you and see what we can explore with them. Fair enough?
Yeah.
I think they're good. I think they're top-notch. Dave Atwell, the world's greatest curmudgeon and one of the coolest people that we've ever had on this show. Believe it or not, Dave, I can't believe I said something good about you. What would you like to ask Billy the Kid?
Well, you know, when I was doing research for my first book, because the first two books I wrote were, in the frontier America, 1865, Dakota Territories and everything, and I was brushing up on, the cult, not only the culture, but the details, How did they – well, one of the things was in my first draft of the book, I kept talking about whiskey bottles, unscrewing the whiskey bottles. And my brother actually, who does my editing and fact-checking, he looked it up and he says, they still kept corks in bottles up until like 1900-something. And that's when I learned that screw cap bottles have only been around for 100-some-odd years. So – little stuff like that, but the problem is when you do research.
Dave, I'm going to interrupt you because I want to explain to Billy who you are. Dave Atwell, other than being the longest running faculty member of our faculty here, he is an author with a number of books. It's called The Hunger Series. It's kind of a zombie thing that much of it is set in the Old West, and he's done a ton of research. At one point, he was number one on Amazon for his series of books. He wrote a book that tied in Jack the Ripper with all this. So Dave Atwell is one of the most experienced folks in the history of the Old West. And so you're talking to really a great resource here and someone that I would love to get the two of you together and just listen to you guys talk because I think we would all learn a lot. So, Dave, there's another big compliment about you. We got lots of compliments for you tonight. So please, Dave, continue. I just wanted Billy to know who he was talking to.
Hey, well,
it's an honor. It's a true honor.
Well, no, both of you guys are way too in over your heads in the compliments. I'm just a regular guy with a laptop and an imagination. So, in the meantime, I still walk in the walls and leave ice cream out on the counter like everybody else does. But when I was doing the research, it's so easy to get distracted when you're reading up on the stuff. And oddly enough, in 2014, when I was reading you know, about the culture and everything, what came on? Young Guns came on. And, you know, you sit down and you say, okay, I'm going to take a break and I'm going to watch it. Well, you watch the movie, and the next thing you know, instead of going back and doing the research, you're reading up on Billy the Kid. So,
yeah.
As I'm reading about Billy the Kid, I kind of got distracted from that and went to Pat Garrett. Now, Velvet, you were talking a moment ago how you believe that, you know, Pat Garrett did not shoot Billy. You know, I was always on that wavelength. I was always like that until I started digging into Pat Garrett. He is he's an arrogant, ineffective human being. God rest his soul. But he was one of those guys, you ever know that guy that was in school with you or go to work with you, come into work and go, man, I drank 48 beers last night, dude. And you're going, you'd be in the damn mortuary if you did that. You know what I mean? There was always that one guy that, you know, man, I beat up this guy in a bar. He was 500 pounds. I'm like, no, you didn't. So when you read on Pat Garrett and you get past the smoke and mirrors and you read about the actual man, that he was such a failure in life that his only claim to fame was actually being part of Billy the Kid. You know, he more or less rode his coattails, for lack of a better term. And I still think to this moment that if indeed he shot and or however he killed Billy the Kid, I don't think it was an honest kill. He did it when the man was asleep. He did it. He shot him in the back. He shot him from the dark. It was a total snipe job. And reading on Pat Garrett, it wouldn't surprise me at all that he shot Billy in the back and went around and threatened everybody in that little town and said, if you ever say anything, I'll be back. And, of course, a couple of years later, he ended up dead, getting shot himself in a bar, if I remember correctly, by some stooge in his own right. But he actually wrote a book about himself that was so embellished, it was actually hard to read. And, at least the excerpts of it was a hard to read. But what's your two cents on Pat Garrett? Was he the ass clown that I give him credit for being, or was he a little more stand up and better man than I give him credit for?
Yeah, I mean, he was a stand up kind of guy, but from what I read and heard from his stories, I mean, he had some failed business deals, and I mean, it seemed like he was struggling a lot, and there was pressure on him to take the kid out, and you know, and then of course the kid escaped from his jail. And also, you know, people say, well, you know, Garrett let the kid go. But, everybody has their opinion about it, which, you know, he just shot two deputies. And, you know, and I know when you shoot two deputies or kill a deputy, I mean, I seriously doubt that Garrett would let him go. He had too many people pressuring him to bring him out. And he went into Pete Maxwell's room and surprised the kid in the dark when the kid thought he went back to Lincoln. He went out of Lincoln for a little bit, then he waited until nighttime and he came back in. So he bluffed Billy, from what I read from her, from historians. It's a perfect way when you're looking for someone and you don't know where they're at. What do? You just if everybody knows you're around, you're never going to find him. But if no one knows you're around, you might just stumble across him and get lucky. And that's what Garrett did. He got lucky, and I believe he was gunned down that night, July 14th. He was caught in the dark. I don't even think Billy knew who shot him. He was dead before he hit the floor. And and of course, there's Delavina Maxwell, who lived to the 30s. There's people that witnessed the body. The Spanish people that were there in Fort Sumter, they signed a paper saying that was him. Now, some people, Garrett could have told him to do that. But, you know, like I say, I mean, back then it was no big deal. They just racked you up and threw you in the ground. There's a lot of controversies that did happen. But like I say, you know, Delavina lived to the 30s, and they interviewed her, and she's the one that went in there to view the body. And she says, you killed my little Billy. You killed my little Billy. And she laid the candles around the body, and they put him on a board. you know, and kept him there till morning. I guess that's when they buried him, along with Charlie Baudry and Tom Wolfhard. You have to remember, they were gunned down one by one. You know, there's that. You know, when you keep hanging around, you keep hanging around and hanging around and hanging around. You shoot two deputies and you go right back up to where you got captured at. And you keep hanging around. You have a death sentence, and eventually someone's going to take you out. And that's just my opinion.
Billy, you got to remember, the monster always returns to the castle.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Billy, what doubts me about Billy, the thing about him going to New Mexico or going to Mexico and laying low and everything, Billy had an arrogant streak in him. And when I say arrogant, the modern day definition of arrogance is probably a little further out than what the actual definition of arrogance is. But when you feel like that the laws of life and the laws of nature and everything else don't apply to you, that's what true arrogance is. And I think Billy had some, you know, almost like he wasn't meant to die. You know what I mean? Rolling around in the
head. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he had to have that.
The thought of him heading down south to Mexico and the thought of him laying low is kind of hard for me to digest because, you know, like a stray dog. You know, you feed a stray dog and it comes back. And when you get tired of feeding it, you kick it in the ribs. And it comes back. You know what I mean? It just keeps coming back until eventually you have to do something. And that's kind of how Billy impressed me. So I
quit watching movies.
Got him that night, but it wasn't clean. It was not clean at all.
No, and Garrett knew he had to do that because that's how most of the people got killed during the Lincoln County War. There was no standing out in the middle of the street like Hollywood portrayed. It was ambushes, waylaying them on the trail, in the back of the head, in the back, in the side. It was all about surprise, and that's how the Garrett had to take the kid out. And he got lucky, and that's what he did. Caught him in the dark, unarmed. You know, Garrett had two deputies with him, you know, and they were sitting on a bench. And they saw someone walking across the yard barefooted with a butcher knife in his hand to get some beef. And this is all documented because, you know, they got interviewed and the kid looked over at him and said, "Don't be alarmed. We're just here to see." They didn't know what the kid looked like. They didn't know him, but they said, "Don't be alarmed. We're just here to see Pete Maxwell about a sheepherder's job." And Billy says, Kenez, who is it?" And he's backing up the steps. And we'll see Garrett heard that voice. He's in that room. He's sitting right next to Pete Maxwell in the dark.
Yep.
Because he went in and woke Pete Maxwell up and said, "Where's Billy?" He goes, "I don't know." He goes, "Well, I'm going to sit right here. That way no one knows I'm here." And that's the whole trick. That was the whole, the dirtiness, the snake. That way nobody knows I'm here. And I'm just going to catnap right here, right next to your bed. And that's what happened. When the kid said Kenez in Spanish, Pat's eyes lit up. And he already drew his gun. And he saw the kid. It was a full moon that night. He saw the silhouette. Garrett wrote a book, and a lot of historians say, why would Garrett lie? Because in his notes, he said that the kid was so close, he could have touched his knee. But Pat Garrett's leaning back with his gun, aiming at a figure. But it's so dark, the kid don't even see him. But then that's when Pete Maxwell, "Billy, it's him." And that's
absolutely
when Billy started backing up. Kenez, who is it? Kenez, bam, at a split second, your life is done.
Yep. And in the dark and in the pitch black, I've spoken about it here on the show before when I was doing the research for the Jack the Ripper book. There is actually, they went to Whitechapel to where some of the murders had happened. And some of the shadows, the way the moon phase goes and everything else, they took a 350-pound guy and dressed him in Victorian age outfits. And he took one step back, just one step back into like a little alcove in one of these alleys, and this guy disappeared. 350-pound guy just disappeared. So, you know, Pat Garrett, if he's sitting back in a chair in the corner, and obviously at this time of, history, there wasn't lights and there wasn't, all houses now, usually it isn't like it was when we were growing up. The house was pitch black at night. Now you've got everything from, everything's charging, so you're getting all these little pin lights all over the place, and, you got your laptops, you have your phone charging, and it'll light up from time to time. But back in those days, it was dark. It was a whole different kind of dark.
Dark was dark,
And if Pat Garrett is sitting there with his gun cocked, there's no way in hell Billy would have had a shot, and that's the only way he knew he could take Billy out.
To play dirty, that's the way.
He fought tooth and nail to make himself look like a hero in that, and I think he got the reverse. I think when he shot Billy, he felt like he was going to be a hero, and society turned on him, and he spent the last couple of years of his life trying to make himself sound like the good guy in that, but...
Yeah, I'm totally convinced.
He was a clown.
I'm sorry.
Hey, go ahead.
Yes, Velvet.
Well,
did you have something to say?
I want to say this. So he had so much pressure on him to kill Billy the Kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Texas Panhandle,
the Cattle Association.
But I think the fact that he couldn't get Billy, and I really don't believe he killed Billy. I believe he killed somebody else because he had to get that monkey off his back. That's why he got gunned down by Wayne Brazel in 1908, and they found Wayne Brazel guilty of murder. Why would you find him guilty of murder if it was self-defense? Because it states it was self-defense. But he got convicted of Pat Garrett's murder.
Yeah.
That's just closure for the whole thing for me, because I think that guy knew Billy the Kid because Billy had come back. And that guy knew Billy. And he said, you know what, Pat's going to be here. You know, he likes to get drunk and he likes to get rowdy and he likes to tell his stories. It won't be that hard to get him to draw his gun. And I guarantee you that's how that went down. Because I don't him being who he was and all that pressure on him, and he was the law at the time in that area, he had to come up with something because he couldn't
find it.
So that's just me. I mean, y'all could be right.
And
y'all I don't know. Right. We don't know what happened.
It's an interesting theory, but if you think about it, if you stop and just think about it, he killed two deputies. You had the Texas Panhandle that wanted to put a stop to this problem. Cattle was end up missing. A lot of political figures, and that's why they went to Garrett, because Garrett knew his moves. And he says, look, you got to deal with this problem. And it's all about being tricky, being slick. See, he went into Fort Sumner during the daytime. Then he told everybody, well, I'm going back to Lincoln, because nobody was helping him out, telling him where the kid was. So he went out, but he stopped, says, we're going back into Fort Sumner, but tonight. See, so he bluffed him. It's a genius.
Right.
It's genius. It's a genius way. But there's so many theories, and I could be wrong. But you think about it, he killed two federal marshals. Two federal marshals. That, a law enforcement, that's a death sentence. And you keep hanging around and you're dancing around. Yeah, I'm the kid. He's enjoying the attention. He's he's enjoying everything, they're taking little cattle off the top, Chisholm's cattle. Chisholm was pissed off. A lot of powerful people wanted to end up the kid. And it's just, but everything, your theory is means a lot too. It makes a lot of sense too. So it's just it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think we were all put together slowly, these pieces, with everybody who's on this podcast, yourself, John LeMay, all these pieces are coming together, because he's like, you're talking, but you're not listening and looking. And that's what I feel like Billy's actually trying to tell us. You're talking, but listen and look.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, my deal was, you know, but anyway.
No, yours is awesome. No, I'm not trying to take away from anything that you've done at all. Because
you're right. I mean, my deal, there's a lot of similarities, but I had my own path. He had his. His was a different time.
Right.
And I may have been connected more than I know. You know, it can get really deep.
Because you're now piecing it together some odd years later that he was trying to tell you something back then.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you start. Go ahead.
Well, I would say I believe God played a big role in it too. See, so the circumstances. I mean, people say, oh, well, he had to do what he had to do, but overall, though, he took human life, and in that aspect, that's not good, no matter what. But there's more killing going on these days than there ever was back then. People are killing terrorists.
Yeah.
People in the name of religion. And it's just, but they really don't know what religion is. But that's what they say. It's all about money and power. So,
Velvet, one thing you said a little bit ago, and I was trying to key on it, and you made an awesome point. We were talking about parallels. And one thing that kind of hit me, again, I think you kind of keyed on it, was Billy the Kid. He, and I can't think of who he worked for, but it was about money. And the town was divided. And Dylan, I think, wasn't Dylan the man who kind of run the town? And he had ties with the sheriff. And that sheriff came into play, which is what started everything. And here we go, fast forward to when you were in town. And you didn't take that specific job. You were questioned by law, you know, as to
exactly the power that to run me out.
Yeah, and that's just another. That's to expand on a parallel, which is just wild. It's kind of mind.
And Billy's trying to. Hey, he's trying to tell him something. He's trying to tell us something.
Well,
I'm
going to stop everybody. And I'm going to tell everybody what is going to be happening, hopefully in the first or the second quarter of next year. Now, last year at the Somerville Comic-Con, we did a Murder 1-2-3, where we had the Murder 1-2-3 crew, which is the Scarycast crew. We talked about the murder of the hanging of Lavinia Fisher. And we actually had a woman's voice come through the speakers. And we have that recorded as Lavinia Fisher, being dead for over 200 years, was trying to tell us that, you know, she wasn't a very nice person, but she didn't kill anybody. And so what we intend to do is I intend to get some folks together in the Charleston area. I'm going to work on putting that together next week. And we're going to have, assuming that Billy can make it there with us, we're going to try to do the same thing. And what I want to do is, because, you know, it might not be convenient for Granny Hulkster. It might not be convenient for Tim. Now, I'm going to make it convenient for Dave Atwell. I'll go up there and I'll put a lasso around him. Dave, and I'm going to pull your butt down to Charleston. And we'll have Velvet, we'll have Malcolm. And we're going to do the same kind of thing, because I get the feeling, and now, Billy, this is a yes or no question for you. This is based on what Velvet has postulated, what Tim has kind of agreed with, and everything. But I believe that Billy the Kid is trying to help us figure out who killed him. Billy, does that sound too crazy?
Oh, I mean, no. I mean, that's your thought, and that's cool and everything. His spirit could be around, and no telling what's going on in the spirit world. You know, me, I basically just want to tell my story, you know, and just what happened. But you just there's a lot of spiritual energy going on out there. No telling. You know,
I believe you
what's
got
going on. Well, yeah, there's definitely, you know, and I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead.
Oh, no, you go. I'm sorry. I don't even know what I was going to say. I forgot. I'm sorry.
No, but what I was going to say is, I think you're right. There seems to be a lot of energy going on, a lot of energy transfer, a lot of communication. And I think this is something that we will enjoy talking about again, because I hate to tell everybody we're about 3 minutes away from quitting time. But absolutely, absolutely, Billy, can we get you on here within a month to continue this conversation?
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad. Thank you for having me on here. It's met a lot of good people on the board tonight, and it's a true honor. You know, so like.
Well, we would love to have you back to talk more about your story and talk more about, I guess we could call it, the murder of the century.
Yeah, and I want to say something real quick. Back to Billy's defense, you know, he was promised a pardon by Governor Lew Wallace. If y'all want to read up on that, there's letters to the governor prior up to his death, you know, it could have been
demise.
Right before. When he went to hang, he was writing letters to the governor. But it's documented that the Governor Lew Wallace reneged on his deal. And Billy was promised a pardon.
It was the DA initially. This is Todd chiming back in. It was the DA initially that reneged, but yes.
Yeah, I mean,
that was after the testimony, and then there was a whole nother bit following that. But, yeah, that's a great thing to follow up on. That's another cool tangent. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
because
Billy was supposed to.
Todd, did you lose your crickets?
I wouldn't have that, by the way, Todd.
I ran it over, Todd. You were going fishing.
Yep.
Well, all I've got to say is that's right. All I've got to say is we have truly opened the biggest can of worms since.
Yeah, we did.
Since Chris Benoit, and that is a can of
worms.
Yeah. And
hey,
just make sure this
guy comes back. Billy, you be sure to come back.
Billy,
thank you. Yeah, definitely.
Billy, can I do something for you before you leave?
What are you going to do, Malcolm?
No.
Well, Billy the Kid was one of the baddest gunslingers in the old world, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
That's right. Stone Cold says that Billy the Kid was the man. So
and
anyway,
I do too, Billy.
Yeah.
And
I can't wait to see what kind of dreams I'm going to have tonight about talking with Billy. So all I got to say is to the modern day Billy the Kid, this has been one of the most illuminating and exciting shows I think we have ever had.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank Granny Hulkster, Dave Atwell. I want to thank Todd.
Okay,
I want to thank
you,
Tim.
Can you stand
I
here
want to
tonight?
Thank Malcolm.
Can you stand down
what?
Here tonight? Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking.
Malcolm's talking.
Oh, okay. And I want to thank Velvet, and I want to thank Malcolm, and I want to thank because I got 90 seconds to say goodbye. And I'm going to tell you what, Billy, this was one of the most imaginative and wonderful podcasts I have ever hosted in my life. So you have no choice, sir. You're coming back, okay?
Well, thank you so much for having me. Maybe we can all take a little trip out west and enjoy the magic of the land and the history.
Good time.
I'll give y'all a grand tour, man. You'll never forget it.
Cool.
All right, well, look, thanks a lot. The British lady has spoken. We got 60 seconds. I'm going to say goodbye. I love all of you. We'll see you next week on the Pop Culture Stars, another great guest.
Good night, everybody.
And again,
good night, everybody. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Good night. Buenas noches. Buenas noches.
Good night, everyone.
That's all, folks.
Rock and roll.
Later.
Later, baby.
Say good night, John Boy.
Dr. John's got to figure out how to hang this thing up. Okay.